Not, I would definitely encourage, as always, anybody who's around to try to be around, which we're trying to make easier by making it earlier, but especially in terms of this sugya, so the seasonal qualities of the sugya are appealing, but we did do it because also it connects strongly to the part of the Masechet Shabbos that we are in, and so the Ashu is like approaching. So the part that's most relevant to tomorrow, Shabbos, Ayin Dalet, and Gimel Ayin Dalet, we'll probably get to tomorrow. So those who are interested not just in the Yonadioma angle, but plugging it back into our sugya, are highly encouraged to be around or to listen to the recording or to somehow be on top of that. Okay, so, but in terms of today, first of all, just one, so what our goal for today probably is to address that second big question that I mentioned in terms of Hatashir, which we spent some time talking about the first big question, where we talked about the issue of whether this prohibition of having less than a full quantity, does that share the identity of the specific Isser, or does it take on its own identity? And we talked about many different applications of that. One thing that we talked about also in terms of the Nyan of the Yoma was the fact that this helps us understand a little bit the Yom Kippur relationship. And some other interesting points we didn't really fully draw out of that. So just to add a few words about that, that the question was raised by some Achronim that it's striking that Chatzi Shir applies to Yom Kippur, which we can't deny that it does because that's the main location of the sugya in context of Yom Kippur. But it doesn't seem to work with the internal logic of Yom Kippur. That since Yom Kippur is not about achila, so then it would seem to be that Chatzi Shir doesn't make sense. Because if we say that there's an issur to eat something, so okay, so we'll say you're only chayiv for eating it when you eat a kezias, but less than that, you're eating something you're not liable for. Okay, so we'll say you're not liable, but you're still eating, it's still awesome. But when it comes to Yom Kippur, as we discussed, there, the Isser is not phrased as one of eating. It's phrased as one of Yishuv Hadas, Yituve Daita, Bittul Tainus, that you are breaking your fast. That's the problem. And if that's the case, anything less than the threshold of breaking the fast should still be not a problem. Should be below this threshold, shouldn't be something we have to even take note of. So the fact that there's still an Isser Chatzi Shir there is less than obvious. And we mentioned the approach that some Achronim have, that might show you that there is a broader Isser of Chatzi Shir, which applies across the board and doesn't have to necessarily work with the internal logic of the issue. So it's just worth being aware of the fact that this opens up a whole other line of thinking, which is relevant to many of the principles of Yom Kippur. Because could we perhaps draw from here the conclusion that some Achronim have, that even though the Isser on Yom Kippur is Yishuv Hadas, maybe it's specifically Yishuv Hadas through Achila. In other words, one could ask, what does it mean? Question about that?
Well, what about the other Hinduyim?
Right, so the other Hinduyim have their own story. The other Hinduyim, just parenthetically, I think I'll probably discuss this in tonight's nighttime chavura. The other Hinduyim, it's a machlokas rishonim, if they're even daraisa. There's clearly, yeah, so and we're interested in that come 10:30 tonight. But that's a whole separate question. But there's certainly room to be machalik between the other Inuyim and Achil and Shtiyah, which is one Inuy. So what do we mean when we say, or it may be relevant to your question though, so you could ask the question as follows. So granted that Yom Kippur, the issue is Yishuv Hadas. That's the problem. The problem is breaking your fast, satisfying yourself, that's called Yishuv Hadas, that's the issue. But once we grant that, what do we mean? Do we mean Yishuv Hadas however it gets there? Or do we mean, no, it's Yishuv Hadas, that tells us that it's a Koseves instead of a Kezias, because that's really what it's about. But it's still essentially Yishuv Hadas through Achila. And perhaps Chatzi Shir applying here shows us that. So, for example, there is a discussion that the Shagas Aryeh has. And the Shagas Aryeh assumes that if you eat something, afilu shalo kederach achila, if you do something in a roundabout way, so that, while that might be an exclusion, it might be a p'tur in other areas of halacha, it's not a p'tur in Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur is not about achila. Yom Kippur is about being satisfied. So if you make yourself satisfied through food, but you do it in a roundabout way, you eat in a way that's not normal, so then that would be a p'tur elsewhere. If you wrap it in something funny, for example, you do something unusual, so that would be a p'tur elsewhere. Says the Shaikh Saliyeh, perhaps it's not a p'tur when it comes to Yom Kippur. Hi.
So although we said we're grouping them differently, in terms of the other inuim, I know Shulchan Aruch and Ahmad talk a lot about how Rechitza, if it's, let's say, if you have some dirt on you or something else, that's not for time. So it would be allowed. Right. According to what we're saying for Shaikh Saliyeh, is that should also...
But then it's also a question of how you're doing it or why you're doing it, which gets into a few other tangential ideas. So I would like to leave those inuim aside for now because it gets us into so many different dimensions. But there, that difference might be relevant, the question of how you're doing it versus why you're doing it. So here, what the Shaikh Saliyeh is saying is if you eat in a strange way, in a way that's shelo kederach, so in halacha that's often pater. But when it comes to Yom Kippur, maybe not, because if we say Yom Kippur is not about achila, so then any way that you ingest this food should make you just as chayav. So that is perhaps questionable, because there's a different approach that the Menchas Chinuch takes, and that the Achiezer takes, consistent with what we mentioned yesterday from the Achiezer, that's not the way to understand it. That yes, it's true that Yishuv Hadas is our negative goal, so to speak, the goal we don't want to reach. But the path to that goal is still achila. We're still talking about achila, just not achila for the sake of achila, but achila for the sake of reaching Yishuv Hadas. So if you reach Yishuv Hadas without achila, so then it would still be the same type of p'tur as it is in any other area of life. And this perhaps might be derived from the fact that we're applying Chatzi Shir here. That the Chatzi Shir, which really should seem to relate to the achila component rather than the Yishuv Hadas component, may reflect the fact that essentially it does boil down to an achila process, even though Yishuv Hadas is what defines the parameters of that process. So that discussion that some have, Gil was asking me yesterday about Mole Lugmav, comes up in that discussion as well. The Emek Bracha suggests that the fact that on Yom Kippur there is a shear of Mole Lugmav for drinking, so that shows you that maybe it's not about great shtia, because shtia is normally defined by rebias. And Mole Lugmav, you might say, for example, is more about te'ima, is more about tasting, like defined by kiddush. So there are those who dispute that. There was an interesting discussion about that in the Sefer Yir HaKodesh I have here if anybody wants to take a look at it. But it all goes back to this question, that do we say that once we accept that Yom Kippur is about not being mevatel l'tainus, so is that purely the whole story? It's just about not being mevatel l'tainus? Or is it really about achil and shtia towards the end of not being mevatel l'tainus? So it has a number of ramifications, and this also, besides the more unusual lo kederach issues, it also gets into questions of IV usage and other types of consuming nutrients. If you could become satiated through ingesting food on Yom Kippur without eating, so that's the whole discussion, the whole literature about this, to what extent is that comparable to actual eating, and it may be relevant to this question. We understand the Yishuv Hadas has to come from food, but if it comes through food, but not a normal derech achila, there's a significant halachic literature about this, which draws on this question. So it's especially in the context of our sugi and the extent to which that draws on the Chatzi Shir ramifications, it's worth being aware of. Okay, yes, sir.
Just the idea of the IVs, that would only work according to the Achiezer and the Menachas Chinuch and not the Shaikh Saliyeh, because he would say, since you have Yishuv Hadas...
Yeah, it would roughly line up that way. I'm not saying there aren't any other details, but the Shaikh Saliyeh is
maintaining...
Right, that anything that gets us satiated through food is the same thing, because it's not about Achila. And these other Achorim will say, no, it still is involved in Achila, just Achila that is defined towards the goal of Yishuv Hadas. Hi.
You post can, I think,
It's a good question. Menchasinuch and Yachiezer are related, so that that tells you anything. It's a more involved discussion. Probably more noted towards the idea that it's achila, but I don't want to say that with absolute surety. Okay, so that's just a hosaf on the Yom Kippur issue. Hi.
In terms of the opinions of Yeshiva Das, is there anyone that separates the difference in terms of eating for the sake of just because you want to enjoy it, or because, let's say, you have a headache or something, it's really affecting everything else, just to get to a neutral point, not to like a feel-good point?
Interesting question. Interesting. I don't know if it ends up playing out, but it's an interesting idea to take. In general, we have this idea that the inuyim are more about lack of benefit rather than about suffering. The Gemara derives that. The Gemara says that maybe we should say that if you're supposed to be ma'ani yourself on your kippur, so you should sit in a very hot place, or you should somehow hurt yourself. And the Gemara says, no, that's not the definition of inuyim. The definition of inuyim is lack of positives rather than active negatives. Does that ever play a role in terms of within the existing categories? Unclear. But a worthy topic for consideration. Okay, so to get back to now kind of segueing from question one to question two. So we left yesterday without actually getting into the Rambam's words in Hilchos Chametz Umasa. The Rambam has a statement which has caused much ink to be spilled, which provoked a lot of discussion. And we're going to use it as a segue from issue one to issue two. The Rambam says that you're not allowed to eat chametz on Pesach. That part was not controversial. He also said that if you eat the kezayis of chametz on Pesach, you're chayav karis. That part was also not controversial. He also said that if you have less than a kezayis, if you have a kol shehu, that that's usur. Still not controversial. When does he become controversial? Because he says, how do I know that you're not allowed to eat a kol shehu of chametz on Pesach? How does he know? Lo ye'achel. Lo ye'achel. Chametz should not be eaten. So that started a whole brouhaha. Because doesn't the Rambam have enough makaros to choose from? The Gemara gives you two. Want to figure out how they relate to each other, but he could have said kol chelev, could have said chazil itzrufei. Why does he need to bring in a third mucker? Or at least an additional mucker, depending on how you want to count the first two. Kesef Mishnah is also bothered by the fact that if you're going to bring up a mucker, so then why this mucker? This mucker seems to be a worse mucker, because it uses that word that we're probably trying to avoid if we want to say chatzishir. What word are we talking about? Achila, right? If the whole point is that Achila means kezayis, and the Rambam says, less than kezayis also, not only enough, but not only enough. So the Kesef Mishnah raises that question. That question is probably more easily addressed. Presumably, what he's focusing on is not the word Achila, but the passive connotation, that the food should not be eaten, rather than focusing on your not eating it. So if the Torah said, don't eat, only if the Torah only said, don't eat, then we could say, all right, it only means the kezayis. But if it says, do not have the chametz eaten, so it has a connotation somewhat similar to kol chelev in putting emphasis on the object rather than on the person, okay, maybe we could hear why he gets it from there, why he's not bothered by the choice of verb of achila, which normally is associated with kezayis. So that question might be the easier question. But the basic question of why does he need that mucker and not satisfy himself with the other makaros was a huge, huge issue. And we won't mention all the different terutzim that are out there. I can give you many places to look if you want to find as many terutzim as you want. Start off by looking in the back of the shops of Frankel Rambam and find many, many marmakomos about different approaches. I just want to mention some that are either especially interesting or help us advance this discussion in a particular direction. Although if anybody wants to take a stab at any approaches, now would be a good time. If anybody wants to make a suggestion, why should it be that the Rambam thinks he needs a separate mucker for chametz rather than everything else? One of
the measure is different.
Okay, why?
Well, I think the Tosfot Yerushalmi actually says that the reason why it's not needed is the two different drashot.
Mm-hmm.
Between, you know, when it comes to chatzis shir of Yom Kippur, for example, or any Isser and Pesach, which is different by nature.
Well, that's probably true. Can you identify the difference in the nature? So we'll come back to what might be a difference, and we'll see how that might be something that both answers and makes the answer complicated. So we'll come back to that in a minute. Hi.
Chametz is like a kosher.
Right.
So it might be a different...
Might be different measurement.
Yeah.
So we'll see, there are those who suggest something along those lines as well. Okay, so we'll come back both to Yehuda's suggestion and both to Gil's suggestion. But in terms of what we've been talking about till now, there are those who say that the whole approach we've been discussing till now is relevant here. That maybe the Rambam's approach is that Chatzi Shir is a general Isser. It does not take on the identity of the individual Isser. That's what we see by the fact that he says you're Chayiv in Chatzi Shir B'Shvua. That if you take a Shvua, then the Isser applies even B'Chatzi Shir. Or alternatively, we discussed this, he says you can take a Shvua on a Chatzi Shir of Isser. We discussed in all those Rambams we've seen so far that it seems to be compatible with what he's saying, that he sees the Isser of Chatzi Shir as a general Isser. So maybe the Rambam prefers a different mucker for Chametz in order to say that yes, that's true by every other Isser. Every other Isser, there's a general Klolistic Chatzi Shir Isser. When it comes to Chametz, Chatzi Shir of Chametz is Chametz. Chatzi Shir of Treifus, of Truma, of Chela, of everything else is not that Isser. It's a general identity. On Pesach, Chatzi Shir of Chametz is called Chametz. Whatever nafkamin is that might happen. So consistent with the approach we've been discussing so far, big question number one, that might possibly explain why the Rambam uses a different mark. Along the lines of what Yehuda said, so if you look, the Mishnah Melech quotes the Maharal Nach, a very difficult position, very intuitive and very logical, and yet at the same time very, very difficult. And it's along the lines of what Yehuda was saying. The Maharal Nach says, I put it on the list if anybody got a chance to see it, the Maharal Nach says that there's a difference between Chelev and Chametz. That when it comes to Chelev, assuming that that's the mucker, call Chelev. So Chelev is permanently Asr. And therefore, we could say it's inherently Asr. And this is a whole discussion in general. Do we assume that an Isser, we talked about this a little bit in the context of Melacha Shabbos, do we assume that if an Isser is temporary, that means that it's not inherent, it's not an Isser Chepsa. So you don't have to say that way. Many do believe that's the case. So what the Maharal Nach seems to be saying is that Chelev is an Isser Chepsa. Chelev is always awesome. Therefore, Chelev is bad. So a little bit of it is also bad. Chametz, however, is a temporary Isser. So being a temporary Isser, maybe you can say, I'll use a tentative language because there are those who feel you could say, but maybe you can say, on a temporary Isser, that it's inherently bad. And therefore, you have to say that it's only bad for you to eat it. It's not bad in itself. So therefore, if it's all about you, so then that becomes more focused on a full shear, because achila is defined by a full shear. And anything less than the full shear is not called you're eating it. So when it comes to chelev, I can believe this is an anyway, because chelev is spiritual poison. But chametz is not spiritual poison. It's fine 51 weeks a year. Therefore, we have to say that the only isser is on eating it. Which I think Yehuda is on the long lines of what you're getting at. Probably, yes. Makes sense.
I just know that there are two different things.
Right, so it seems to make sense, but it's very intuitive and logical, but there is a major textual issue. Gil?
Isn't there a whole discussion of if Chametz is double shaved from a tier, and if it isn't double shaved from a tier, then this wouldn't...
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss about whether this is true, that Chametz is not an Isser Chepsa, and there's a whole Ritva. We could get very far afield with it, but for now, let's at least acknowledge that could be a possibility. We could discuss at a different time if it's actually accurate or not.
Just to finish the thought, this option, therefore we're saying what? That
we're saying that Kol Chelev would not have done the job for us.
No, so then now that we have the pasuk, that it's its own Isser, or like everything else?
That it at least doesn't Isser Chatzi Shir. How far do you want to take that? Because you could have said there should be no Isser Chatzi Shir at all.
That's what I'm saying. So one type of the pasuk.
Right.
Saying,
how far do you want to go with it?
Is inherent, or that it's not, but there's still chassid shir.
You could say either or both, as well. Maybe
what was he suggesting?
He seems to suggest just that it's awesome. Regular. Just the fact that it's awesome. How we define it, we don't know. But just all we know from his approach is that you would have thought it was a mutter, and now we know that it's not a mutter. And now we know it's awesome. What's the longest of why it's awesome? We'll try to say a little bit more about that, but from his approach, we don't know the full story yet. We just know that it's awesome. That the reason the Rambam needs to say it is because otherwise you could have thought it was a mutter.
It doesn't seem like he's saying that. It then falls into the great category.
It might be. We can speculate. But step one is just that it's awesome. So what's the big textual problem, even though it makes sense on this? It makes sense in isolation. What's the big problem? What would be another case of a temporary issue?
Nazir.
Well, Nazir maybe not, but... Those are less temporary because their status changes. But what about Yom Kippur? But Yom Kippur is the most temporary of the sermon, and the most has to be temporary, because otherwise they have to say all food in the world is usur. So according to Mahalan's logic, it would sound like there shouldn't be an isur of chatzis shir on Yom Kippur. And of course, that's impossible to say as we started off, because the sugya is within the context of Yom Kippur. So is there a way to deal with that? There probably is, and we'll try to come to some approaches. But on the surface, that seems to be a major issue. To say that a temporary Isser doesn't have chatzis shir, it's going to hurt us on the Yom Kippur front.
You never say that chametz on itself is an Isser on the chatzis shel chametz and Yom Kippur, it's on the person that he can't eat. That's how the food is Isser.
Right, the problem is that that's what seems to be the case. But then according to the Mahal Nach's logic, it would seem that a chatzis shir shouldn't apply to Yom Kippur. I think that distinction may very well be true. If you want to call chametz an Isser chatzis and leave that out for Yom Kippur, you could do that. But still going to give us problems with it on that. Hi.
Didn't we mention Tosfos Yom Kippur that possibly suggested that?
Suggested that it shouldn't apply to Yom Kippur? Right, well, he's asking why does it apply, but you can't say that it doesn't because the Gemara clearly puts it there. So that's a big issue. So we'll come back to different ways in which we could see this that may help them on that. But on the surface, it's something to wonder about. So another major approach that's we'll mention because it's interesting, and relates to what Gil said. But we've been talking about chatzis shir now for a few days. If I asked you to translate that term into English, chatzis shir, how would you translate it?
What are the words? Half an
amount. Well, you can't really say half, right? Literally,
less than enough.
Right, less. You see, we talk about modern day Hebrew or even classical Hebrew chatzis as half. But in these sources, we have to translate it as any fraction, right? Not half, 50%, but anything less than full.
I think it just says chatzi because that's easily...
Right, it seems to be...
You can't do 0.75, it's very difficult.
Correct, so it seems to be an imprecise usage, right? That really doesn't mean half, but it means a fraction, anything less than a whole. That's how we've been assuming the whole time, and that's probably the case. However, it's interesting that there are a few who suggest, a handful. In 99% of the literature about this topic, chatzis shir means a fraction of the shir. But, for example, the Avnei Nezer has a tshuva where he tentatively suggests, within the Rambam, that maybe the Rambam is telling you that that's not the case. That maybe the view of the Rambam is that a chatzis shir is literal. It's 50% and up. And less than 50% would actually not be covered under chatzis shir legislation. Would be mutter. And the chiddush of chametz, the language uses of kolshu, saying that any amount of chametz is usur. So midinei chatzis shir, you would need a half kezias, you need 50% of the zayas. And the chiddush is that no, chametz applies even on a much smaller level, even on a kol shu.
Hi. Didn't we have a similar problem with the Rambam before, when the Rambam said that kol shu was aser, we need a chatzis shir? We always seem to assume that there was something besides the chatzis shir, it's also there's a kol shu thing. So this idea is not new.
Well, we discussed earlier, right? We talked about in terms of some of the Shabbos shir, that what exactly is the definition of kol shehu? Is it a shir or is it the absence of a shir? And that has some type of implications for some of the definitions of the melachos. It is true there is some ambiguity about what kol shehu means. But whether or not this theory really holds up in the Rambam, there's a lot to figure out. But this is what some do float out there as a possible resolution.
If everyone acknowledges something called kol shehu, it's different than a chetzi shir. Possibly. Everyone seems to be bothered by the Rambam.
Right, that may be the case.
So then everyone seems to acknowledge there are already two levels, even below the shir.
Perhaps.
So all the...
I don't know if everyone acknowledges, but you're right, that could be the case.
So I mean, you're just changing the goalposts here. You're not really kind of...
Yeah, so the point is that a chetzi shir would be a half kezias, and a half kezias, less than half kezias, would have been mutter, except that the pasuk of chametz comes to aser even a kol shehu. Yitzchok Zilberstein published an essay in the journal where he suggested, what do you think is, what's the lovelace of that word? That's what the Rambam is saying. What's the reason to require at least half? And do you want to take a stab at that? Why is a half better than 40%? Neither of them are 100%. So maybe it's not kosher. Why not though? So take that a little bit further.
Maybe because of less you don't get anything out of it.
Well, either way, you don't have the full amount.
So if you look at all the chazis,
right?
So then, rate 50%, rate more right chazis rupe. So it's double chashuv in chazis rupe.
So that's actually the way they approach that. It was Zilberstein takes. Why does that bother you?
30-30-30, that's also...
So his approach is that basically the chazis rupe means that this is an equal partner in this, that this something the same size as this will make it usher, make it liable. While if it's less than 50%, there's already, yes, and whatever combination would make it usher, would be bottle. This would be a secondary part. That's already used the term chashuv, so that's how he understands the chashuv.
If you assume chatzishir,
that's only usher, then you're chatzishir. So it's actually interesting. So with Nassim Gestetner, in one of his shuvas, and the shuvas Laharis Nassim, he has a whole printress in the back, one of the volumes, about pikuach nefesh issues. He says, if we would follow this approach, we would come out for a chumra lahalacha. Because, for example, on Yom Kippur, if we take the approach that ideally a chole should have less than a shir, so now we're opening up a whole new level. We should say, ideally, he should have less than half a shir. If he needs to, then he should have a half a shir. And then, if he needs more, he should have a whole shir. The idea that we don't distinguish within less than a shir, maybe that's not the case. Maybe we should distinguish. Right? Maybe less than a half of a shear is had to go. So that would have major implications in the halacha if that were indeed the case. Rav Nachum Zemba, he's a major gaon. We'll talk about it a little bit more tomorrow. It'll be very relevant to some of the Shabbos issues. Rav Nachum Zemba was a phenomenal gaon who was killed in the Warsaw ghetto. And he has a... There are a few svarim that are left from the many, many, many svarim that he wrote. And we'll come back to it tomorrow a little bit, but there is a sefer that was published by his son, who also died young, called the Gur Arye Yehuda. And he quotes from his father, from Rabbi Nachum Zemba, something which may help the Maral Nach. I don't remember if he actually mentions the Maral Nach, but it may help us understand it. That perhaps what the Rambam means is that maybe, like Toby was just saying, maybe Chazilis Drufe requires 50%. Or maybe less than 50%. That's the end of Kol Chelet. So then you could use the Maral Nach, and you could say that yes, there's an Isser for even temporary Isurim, but that only kicks in when it's Chazilis Drufe. That only kicks in at 50%. And Kol Chelev, which works at less than 50%, that wouldn't apply to a temporary Isser. So it's not a kasha why the Gemara talks about it in the context of Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur happens to be relevant because it's also got the Chazlitz Rufe issue. But if you have less than half, then it's not Chazlitz Rufe, and it only would have been Isser because of Kol Chelev. And we saw, like the Maral Nach said, Kol Chelev doesn't work for Chametz because Chametz is temporary. that theoretically could, and again, I don't remember if he mentions the Mahal Nach, that theoretically could work with the Mahal Nach, that excluding chametz from kol chelev and needing a source because there's a nafkamina to asher less than half, while still allowing for a concept of chatzi shir to exist by temporary yisurim for the chaz with through fair reason. So again, that's all very theoretical. And there are many, many other approaches. Again, I'm happy to provide you with places to look if you want to spend an infinite amount of time looking at different approaches to this drama. But there is an approach which gets us into the next phase of our discussion. Big question number two about Chatzi Shir zeroes in on this phrase, Chazal is Drufe. The phrase that we translated vaguely at the beginning. What does that phrase mean? What is the concern of Kevin the Chazal is Drufe, Yisura Kavacha? And there are at least two ways to understand it. You could formulate perhaps more ways. See Pesach Frank, one of his farmers, the whole country, where he has three ways looking at it. But there are at least two broad ways to look at this concept. Anybody want to suggest one or other ways? What does this phrase mean? What are we stating here when we say it came with the Chad the Srufe Surakov?
Because you have an amount that you can add on another bit to the point where it becomes Ashir.
Right, and therefore what?
Therefore,
so why should that create an Isser on the smaller amount?
So again, there.
Yes. Oh, okay. So that's probably the more intuitive way of reading it. Right? If this is a type of siyag, right? We could call this the potato chip svar. Right? Because we know the famous issue with potato chips, which is what? You can't eat just one, right? So maybe that's the concern, that you're going to limit yourself to this little Hershey's Kiss of pork. You can't eat just one. It's very likely, it's clearly a risk that you're going to come to eat more than one. So that would be perhaps a siyag type of concern. And similar to what we discussed to the Tosefta Shabbos discussion, so if you maintain that Chatzi Shir is an Issur Rabbanan, the view of Reish Lakish in the Gemara, so it's very likely that that's what he's saying. That makes a lot of sense, that he probably says it's an Issur Rabbanan because he perceives the Issur as really only being more than a shir. But there's a clear risk in having less. And therefore it makes sense that Chazal would have asked that. But even according to the view that's followed the halacha, the Chatzi Shir is Nisr Daraisa, again, we've already discussed that it's possible for Nisr Daraisa also to have a siyag intent associated with it. So that's, on the surface, perhaps the more intuitive way to look at it, or at least a valid way to look at it, that we're talking about a siyag consideration. Sammy?
I'd also say, like, the water formed with the rock,
uh-huh,
right? Maybe not any single one piece you would say it would be us.
So you're suggesting a different question.
Since you need all of them, though, so each one is kosher.
So, because without it, so you take away any part, you don't have the shear, assuming you only have an exact shear. But since all of it is part,
since the logic exists that if you would have only had a shear, which would be us, or therefore mm-hmm. would apply even by a greater than amount of shear, that each small piece that you have is
because once you look at the full shear, it's made up of these parts, which are all chatzi shears. So therefore, when Mela, it can't be that none of them. It's a famous philosophical question, right? You know, when does a question that the philosophers discuss, when does a haystack become a haystack? Because if I take away one piece of straw from a haystack, one piece of hay from a haystack. So, still a haystack, right? You can't say that I took away. You can't say that what I took away wasn't a piece of straw. But at some point, it stops being a haystack. But each time, I only took away one piece of straw. So, at what point does the mass become separate from its parts? That's a philosophical question asked in general. And maybe that's relevant here as well. Maybe that's what they're saying. That if we look backwards, we see that the full shir yechayev for is made up of nothing other than more of this. Then that shows you that this is problematic. So there are different versions of that, just to finish the point, different versions of that. But I think you are correct. Another way to say it, which essentially is really the same point, And you could call this the marijuana svara. We'll call the first svara the potato chip svara. This one you call the marijuana svara. Or drugs in general, right? So drugs are illegal in America. But there's a shear, right? You can only go to jail if you're caught with a certain amount, right? So less than a shear, if you have less than a shear, then not going to arrest you. So what does that mean? That means, so you could have the President of the United States come out during a press conference, and you could have like a little bit of marijuana, it's Papas Mikashir, and the whole world's watching, and it's fine, it's had to gummer because it's Papas Mikashir. So would anyone say such a thing? Would it be any less of a scandal because it was Papas Mikashir? Presumably not, right? Presumably they'll say he's committing a crime in public, it's terrible. It's less than Mikashir. So no, it's not less than Kashir. It's clear in the eyes of the world that the shear is just because government needs some quantifiable amount in order to act. But it tells you the fact that they arrest you for having a certain amount is a way of saying that drugs are bad. And when they're significant, we're going to take action. But the fact that we take action at any point shows you that we're dealing with a bad substance. So one could say that that's what's going on here, which is, it boils down, that's not exactly what Samuel was saying, but it boils down to the same thing, we'll take this time in a second. It boils down to what Samuel was saying, that essentially, this is a reflection of the fact that this is inherently bad. That if we're going to punish you for a certain amount, that shows you we're dealing with a bad substance. And then if you have less than that, even if you're not punishable, you're doing something wrong. You ready to comment on that?
Yeah, I want to say that just the concept of chazin strufa, to say that it's a do-raisa concept, it's just a huge jump.
Oh, so let's discuss that. So you and I were talking about this during Seder, and I think the point he's bringing up now is very relevant. Let me, it's interesting because you don't find this discussed so much in the Sfarim, but I think this is a correct point. And this is what you and I were discussing before. This question, what does chazal tzrufe mean? It's a very fundamental question. Is chazal tzrufe a siag? That we're afraid you're going to have more potato chips made on pork, so therefore we don't let you have one. Or is it not a siag? Whether you say it Sandy's way or you say it the way I was just saying now, it's the same idea, that it's not out of any concern that you're going to have more. But rather, it's about understanding that this is a bad substance. And it's a bad substance because we can look backwards and we can see that if it's ultimately punishable, that shows you we're dealing with a bad substance. So that's a question that's going to have a lot of ramifications. But one of the issues that's affected, and I think this is what Yehuda is asking, is we saw that we have two possible sources for fact issue. Either kol chela, or chazal tzrufe, or they work together somehow. And we saw there was a machlokas among the Rishonim, we saw the Tosfos Rishonim and the Ran, about which is the dominant source, or is there some type of partnership here. If you want to say that chazal tzrufe is really the source, so then we're making a very bold statement. Because it's true that a svara can have the power of a pasuk. A svara is treated like a din daraisa. That's proved from the fact that the Gemara will sometimes ask when it wants to know the pasuk, the makar for something. So sometimes the Gemara says, like in the context of hamotzi mechaver ol harayim, the Gemara says lama likra svara. Why do I need a pasuk? It's a svara. It's got to be true. What do you mean? Why do I need a pasuk? I need a pasuk for it to be an iser daraisa. So you see from those Gemaras, as the Shkarot discussed, as others discussed, that a svara can be as authoritative as a pasuk. But we all understand that there are svaras and there are svaras. That in order for a svara to be that authoritative, it would have to be a very waterproof, rock-solid svara. And that a svara with a lowercase s, right, a svara that seems logical but is not as impenetrable, would not be as authoritative as a pasuk. So to say that Chazal Tzrufe is the makor with a capital M,
we would have to put a lot of faith in that svara. It would have to be a irrefutable svara. Sammy?
Well, I mean, specifically about just the example that you brought about Moshe Haverah of Pariah. So, right, so the Gemara does bring up the svara, and then the Shita who convinces on that Gemara asks, how can you say that it's a svara if some tosar use? And one of his answers is that, no, we totally disregard Sophos. It is a svar. It's so pashut, and that's how much we disregard Sophos.
So you're strengthening.
Clearly, according to this, it doesn't need to be water. Clearly, Sophos didn't hold of the svar.
Well, I don't know if I understand.
That answer, he doesn't agree with it. Because if he held with, agreed with the svar, so then, I mean, whether you have to say that Sophos disagrees with the most famous barrel of rye is a whole other can of worms, but I'm saying that.
It's for next year. She was learning about it. See you next year.
There's still times we're using
Moshe
Haverah
as a limo. I don't know if calling a svara watertight has to mean that everyone has to agree. Something that's why somebody's opinion might get outweighed.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
No, I understand, but I'm saying that it also doesn't need to be meaning that clearly some of us didn't think that it was that strong of a svara.
Correct, but his opinion doesn't have to carry the day.
No, that's fine, but I'm saying that so then according to Rabbi Yochanan could be it's a great star, and that's how he passed it, and therefore, regardless of how not strong it might be because of other reasons, then that's good enough.
Still, but even for him, the star has to be powerful enough. I'll tell you what I'm getting at, and you'll then see if you're still answering the same question. Mm-hmm. That if you want to say it's a siyag, okay, so fine, we can accept the idea of a siyag ben Torah. But a siyag that is not coming from a pasuk, but is a svara min haTorah. So to say, well, the fear that you will go farther is a svara that creates an iser daraisa. Most of the iserim drabanan are about such concerns, and we still assume that those are drabanans. So if that was a svara that was always self-evident, so then we wouldn't have to have the drabanan that we have. That we treat as din drabban. So if it's a pasuk that says lo socho chatzi shir, okay, so the Torah singles out this case, and that's an issur d'oraisa. But if we're not using the pasuk and we're saying it's the svara, it's the same svara that's present in many other places where we have din drabban that we don't call d'oraisa. So it's not clear why this gather should be more of a d'oraisa than any other siyah. If you want to say that it's a svara that works by itself, I think you're pushed more to say something like Sammy was saying before you started arguing, a minute before, or the drug point you were saying before, that it's not about the siyag concern, it's about the concern and the fact that the whole structure shows you you're dealing with something bad, and that should be self-evident. Gil?
Based on the marijuana svara, would it work the inverse way, like we're speaking about the other day, in terms of doing something good?
Oh, excellent. So that's the next point to mention. So there are those who make that suggestion. For example, Reb Zalman Chaim Goldberg was in the same print in this year, it was called Oros HaMoedim, something along those lines. He has a whole discussion where he makes that point. And I think Gil is correct about that. That we started to discuss the first day of the Sugya, that there is a whole discussion in Achronim, the Gemara doesn't sort of make a clear statement about it, the latest Gemara picked up the issue, that should we say there's a parallel concept of Chatzi Shir by Mitzvos. That if we say that when it comes to Averos, you do this threshold, you eat a Kazayas, you're punishable, and less than a Kazayas is bad. So should we say there's an inverse concept as well? That when it comes to mitzvahs, you do this much of a mitzvah, it's credited, you're yotzeh. Less than that is also good. So I think what Gil's getting at is that it might depend on this question. If you say chazalitz rufe is a siyag, so then it doesn't make sense that it's siyag by mitzvahs. That's a concern by avirus. But if we want to say that it reflects in the character of what's going on, so then that does flip. That if we say that you're punished for hitting a certain point, shows you that the whole endeavor was bad. So there is a logic that is the inverse of that. That if you're rewarded for hitting a certain point, it shows you the whole endeavor was good. So I think there is a lot of svara to say that that question of a conceptual chatzi shir by mitzvot, which is a whole separate discussion, but that assuming there should be a mirror image does correlate to this question of what chazal truth means.
Hi. So also the question on the second, the drug svara. Mm-hmm. So according to that opinion, though, it shouldn't be limited, let's say, under a shir, because anything, the least amount is worse. Like half of a chatzi shir as opposed to three quarters of a chatzi shir is better. But in all the, let's say, koach nefesh questions, we say that, or let's say, just want to take medicine, mm-hmm. Yom Kippur, we just say is to do with less than chatzi shir. But it should be the least possible amount, because it's
Why does that flow specifically from that point?
Because if we say that it's worse, that the whole idea is bad, so you want to have as little as possible.
Well, I would say the whole idea is bad, so you shouldn't do it at all.
And if you have to do it.
If you have to do it, so then should it therefore say that you should do as little of what you're doing? Maybe. Because what you're saying is bad, so then you shouldn't be doing anything bad. And any more you're doing more bad stuff. That could be true. Why don't we find that playing out in halacha? Because again, we probably seem to decide that we're talking about two tiers. That ideally, if you need to, pikuach nefesh will do even actually certain. But if we could have something that's defined as a different level, because it's not publishable, so then we prefer looking to that level. Especially since we're at the end of the day, we're doing these mutter anyway. We're just trying to keep the clash as low as possible. But your point might be, your point is, let's say, for example, let's say a doctor were to say to you, that you know, you need to take this poison. You have a certain sickness, and the only thing that can save you is this poison. Either the poison is dangerous. Yeah, it's dangerous, but you have to. You have this fatal illness that'll kill you in the next 5 minutes. So, and this poison is the only possible cure. So then, what would you do? You'd probably try to take as little as possible, the minimum dose that will get rid of this. That will get rid of this illness while posing the minimal risk to you from the other side. Something to think about. Hi.
The mirror has a lashon of tchilas iser, as we describe as chazal tzruvim.
Okay.
If you understand that it's some type of like there's this stage before arshah chayiv, not necessarily that shirim matter, just there's this pre-stage and then you're chayiv, so then you wouldn't necessarily distinguish on the spectrum from nothing to a shir. That's all just tchilas iser. It's not about a certain poison.
I can see reading it the other way also. It's reading that. What it means is retroactively, we now see that this is when you started the Aveir. Which then becomes hard to say that if you finished an Aveir or Chayiv, and we now look back and see everything you do as part of the Aveir, so then to say that was Mutter when you started it is hard to say. It's another way of looking at the logic that it basically reflects back on what you did. Which parallels also our Zriya question, right? The Minchas Tchinuch and the Rashash. So since we know having this plant grow is an iser, so what do we say about the whole process that leads up to it, and is it only if it actually brings about that result, or whether you stopped in the middle, what would the status of all that be?
So even if it reflects back, it's not reflecting back on the quantity amount.
But it's reflecting back on every engagement that you have in the system. All of the steps, the more you're doing, maybe the more that's problematic. So there are more points to make about this, but before we make them, so let's at least see why we got onto this. We were talking about the Rambam. Right, what does the Rambam say? So the Rambam has his special marker for chametz. So maybe one could suggest that why does the Rambam need a special marker for chametz? Because it could make a scenario where it's impossible for you to have a full kezias of chametz. Let's say, for example, the last minute of Pesach. You don't have time to eat a whole shear. So therefore, the chatzi shear, it's not shayach for you to finish it. So maybe you want to make a case that during that minute, chatzi shear would have been mutter if the concern is you're going to complete the shear. So the extra pasuk comes and tells you, no, even then it's asur, because it's asur inherently, regardless of any likelihood or any fear of finishing this year. I think Sandy was up first.
Yeah, so that would only work with the Maror Amach.
Not necessarily, because the mitzias is that it's temporary. The mitzias is that this isur, after Pesach is over, is going to be mutter.
So, meaning, But that's only saying that if doing less than the shear in and of itself isn't a bad thing.
Well, but that
the
may,
assumption is.
I think you're right. They may be connected, and we'll talk about possible connections in a second. But at the moment, on the surface, it's not necessarily the same thing. What they're saying is if we assume that the chatzi shear is out of a concern for finishing the shear, maybe one would make the conclusion that if it's impossible to finish the shear, it's not usur. Now, you might argue, wait a minute, I can't say that. Even if I believe it's a siyag, so darshin and tying the kara, so I'm allowed to figure out that it's a siyag and it doesn't apply when there's no possibility of the actual usur. It's one thing to say conceptually that it's a siyag, but to say there's going to be nafka minas? I agree, that's a powerful question. Most achronim, as we'll see, weren't bothered by it. And we'll talk a little bit why not. But for now, accept the fact that most achronim weren't bothered by it. Some were, and we'll come back to that point. Hi.
So doesn't it obviously have the same problem as the Marana? Because it should apply to Yom Kippur also. It's also time.
No, so it would apply to Yom Kippur in the last minute of Yom Kippur.
Right.
And maybe in Achanami, then you'll say, okay, the last minute of Kippur, maybe Taka's true, maybe the last minute of Yom Kippur, there's no Isser Chatzis.
So according to that, the Rambam would hold that you could eat the last minute of Yom
Kippur. Yeah, maybe. We don't know that he doesn't. Maybe.
The implication of this is that doing anything less is mutter as long as you can finish it.
Correct.
I'm saying, how do you get that unless you say that the Makor.
I think you're right that there may be a conceptual similarity between the two, and we'll come back to that point. That there may be an overlap, we'll see that there may be an overlapping shared premise.
Yeah.
They don't have to necessarily equate. And we'll see some other examples in a second. So maybe that's what's going on with the Rambam. Right? That maybe the Rambam is telling you this mucker is just for the last minute. So you might think, okay, that's a little unlikely. That sounds like that comes from the Farfetch thereof. Right? Is that really so likely that that's the pshat in the Rambam? So you should know that this svara is said by four of our biggest achronim, probably the four biggest achronim in history, all maintain this explanation in the Rambam. Those four being Shai Sari, Zimikuf, Rode Bihuda, in his Chuvas, Arachayim Nun Gimel, and also in the Slach.
Rabbi Huda Eger.
Simon Nun Gimel, Rabbi Kiva Eger, in his Chumas, Kof Nun Dalek, and the Chassam Sofer. That's probably, if we were to pick four of the biggest achronim in history, that's a pretty heavy-hitting list. Shaktari, the Yehud, the Kiva Eger, and the Chassam Sofer all maintain, if you look in the drush of the Chassam Sofer, he has an interesting drush explaining why he thinks that's true. But this is an approach that has major, major support. Which is why I wanted to say, if you wanted to object, I shouldn't have time to draw, so it's a valid objection. It's part of a larger Siyag L'Oraisa issue. But you see that many of the biggest achronim were not worried about that. So that opens up, again, a whole other avenue of looking at it. And a source you could find in Rishonim, actually put on your Marmokomos list, is that the Meiri says something very similar in a different context. I don't know if anyone saw it, but the Meiri was on this morning's list. I think put the text on the list. The Meiri says that we mentioned yesterday there was a machlokas about if somebody takes a shvua not to have, let's say, a Hershey's Kiss of pork, a chatzishir of pork. So we saw there was a machlokas rishonim whether or not that shvuah is valid. Right? Normally a shvuah against the Torah or to infirm the Torah is batal, is not valid. And whether or not a chatzishir of iser is in that category, we saw that was machlokas rishonim. And we mentioned the approach yesterday that either you believe that it is considered to be asur min haTorah because it's an individualized iser, that it has the same identity as the broader iser, so it's considered to be covered by the Torah already. Or if you said that there's no impediment to the shvuah, a shvuah is chal. That was the view of the Rambam. That was because we saw it as a broader Torah policy that doesn't have that identity of the iser. we mentioned the Ran, the other Rishonim who say that if it's not in a specific identifiable pasuk, then a shvua does take effect. So the Meiri has a different approach. The Meiri says the shvua is chal. You can take the shvua on a chatzis year. But he has a whole different approach. What does the Meiri say? He says, why is it that chatzis year is us? It's us here because we're afraid that you're going to eat the whole shear. But if one were to take a shvua in such a way that he's specifying a chatzis shear, what does that show you about his intentions? He's not going to have a whole shear. Apparently, for whatever reason, having a whole shear is not on the table. And if that's the case, says the Meiri, a fascinating chiddush, it's not asur in Atar anymore. We're not asur at all, maybe anymore. The whole isur is because of the concern you're going to finish a shear. Now, you're apparently not going to finish a shear, because if you were likely to finish a shear, if that was a possibility, you were taking a normal shear. The fact you had to specify less than a shear shows that that's not a possibility. So, chatzis shear is not asur, therefore the shvua kicks in. Fascinating idea. This comes up in a number of other examples, trying to mention perhaps a few other examples that are all associated with Prima Gadim. Prima Gadim is the author of many, many Chashim Sfarim, in addition to his commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, which are super commentaries, not only because of their quality, but because of their style. They are commentaries on commentaries. But he also wrote many different introductions, which are often quoted. Really into Psicha Koleles, Psicha Shabbos. Very often what he writes in his introductory essays becomes very important sources in various discussions. So Prima Gadim has a number of interesting points that relate to this issue. One issue he asks has to do with the Gidan Dasha. So it says that when it comes to Gidan Dasha has its own unique characteristics to it. And one of the things about Gidan Dasha is that you can be chayiv for less than a kezias if you eat the whole thing at once. If the whole gid is less than a kezias, you have it b'bas achas, so then you could be chayiv. So asks the Prima Gadim, what if you take this less than a kezias Gidan Dasha and have half of it, you break it up? So then, even if you end up finishing it, since you didn't have it in one shot, you're not going to be chayiv. So if that's the case, maybe we should say, no mitzvah chatzis shear then. So I recall, it was this time of year, many years ago, when I was in high school. Came to learn here one night. I was here for Slichus, this time of year. So after Slichus, this is what shows you that I was a mature high school student, I went to speak to Rav Shechter and asked him about the Prima Gadim. And somebody who would later become a Rosh Yeshiva here took me majorly to task for that. So why was I bothering him at 2 o'clock in the morning with the Prima Gadim? But, and that's a valid point, don't do that anymore. But despite the fact that it was 2 o'clock in the morning, Rav Shechter explained that he thinks it's lakasha on the Prima Gadim, because even though you can't become chayiv for that Gidan Dasha, you could take parts of a different Gidan Dasha and add up to a kezias and chayiv. So he's not sure why the possibility of becoming chayiv is off the table. So that's a fair question. We'll talk about the Hilchos Gidan Dasha and go into it more. But the point that the Prima Gadim is bringing out is that maybe this is a case where you can forestall the possibility of completing this year, and maybe chatzis shear should be mutter. Yes, sir.
Is there any issue with Gidan Dasha being a beria, even if it's less than a kezias?
Well, that's what he's talking about. But in order to do that, you have to have it all in one shot. So if you don't have it once, you break it up already, so then you lose that possibility, and that's where he's coming from. That's his question.
Rav Shechter was saying that...
He was saying that you could still get a kezias, though, because you could bring different Gidan Dasha parts from different animals and get a kezias. The Prima Gadim elsewhere also raises the question, what about Isurim that are not only about Achila, but what about For example, let's say in a bus of a chalav context, where you have a surim of Hanah or of Bishul, so is there an Isser Chati Shir there as well? And the premise of his question is, maybe we should say the whole concept of Chazal and Zdrufe is really a Chiddush that only makes sense in an Achila context. Because when it comes to Achila, so not only do we talk about Kedayas, but there's another part of the sentence. It's Kedei Achilas Pras, that there's a time limit. So that time limit takes what would otherwise be disparate actions and joins them. So if I have half kezias now, another half kezias a minute from now. So you could have said those are two separate actions. What's the connection? I did two half of theirs. What makes them into one? So maybe it's the fact that kedei achilas pras bonds them. So maybe by other yisurim that are not achilu defined, maybe there is no such unifying element, and there's no chazlu istrufe. And it should be mutter. So that's a question that was discussed by many. Happens to be Rabbi Shulam Yekutno, the great Gaon, the author of the Avin Das on Yoredeya. He thinks the opposite is true. He thinks that Kedei Achilas Pras is really a kula. That in other areas of halacha, there's automatic siruf of all the different things that you do. And it's just when it comes to achila, there's a chiddush that the clock runs out, that it expires. Prima Gadam is assuming it's a chiddush in the other direction. But maybe you could say the other way. That's a whole discussion when you have these yisurim, and we'll discuss probably tomorrow about the Chacham Tzvi, who focused on achila for different reasons. But that, again, draws on this possibility that maybe chazlut strufe is more of a siag rather than an objective isur. And maybe that affects how the Yisr plays out. Elsewhere, there's a third group. It says a radical chiddush. When it comes to the Yisr of the Nazir, so the Prima Gadim has a discussion that the Torah says that a Nazir is not allowed to drink wine. And it also says, "Call Mishra Sanavim, is not allowed to have vinegar, is not allowed to have grapes." It says a Medrash that suggests that those Yisurim are really a Siag Min HaTorah. That really, why does the Torah care if a Nazir eats grapes or drinks vinegar? It's really about intoxication. It's really about wine. But these other items that are associated with wine, so the Torah forbade those also, as a siag, you shouldn't come to drink wine. So siag ben
Torah. Is there an onesh for eating grapes?
So that it seems not. Although actually, no, it's not so clear. We'll leave that aside for now.
Okay.
But that, it's an indecision, we'll leave that aside for now. So, says the Prima Gadim, the radical chiddush. He says, based on that, you could assume that a chatzi shir of these food items is mutter. Why? Siag le siag. We generally have a rule that we don't say a gezera le gezera. We don't impose one gezera on top of another. So says the Prima Gadim that if you say that vinegar and grapes, that's a siag, and you say that chatzi shir is a siag, so chatzi shir of grapes, siag and siag is mutter. Yes, sir.
Does that apply by deoraisis?
I would not think so. That's part of why it's a radical chiddush. There are different explanations of why you say gzeira le gzeira. We can talk about them a bit more time. But they are all, the ones that are most prominent, are all contingent on the premise that we're talking about dinim d'rabbanan. The idea that the Torah can't have a gzeira le gzeira is a massive chiddush. A possible hesitant one could say. We'll maybe come back to it at a different time. But that's a fascinating idea. And who is among those who objects to this fetish? Rav Yosef Engel. Rav Yosef Engel, who is the big Baal HaMaimer about Siag D'Oraisa, he's the one who is the expert on this topic. He quotes this Prima Gadim and says he doesn't think it's possible at all. for a number of reasons. And among them, he says that as much as he is the author of the Siach ben Torah manifesto, but when it comes to Chaz Litzrufe, he doesn't think it means that at all. He doesn't think, it's surprising, many others thought there was a valid reason. He says he doesn't think that's what Chaz Litzrufe means. He doesn't think the words are so veiled, that interpretation, they bear that interpretation at all. That's not what it's about. In addition to the fact that you could say that the Daraisa are very hard to apply this logic. It's interesting, if you want to put everything together, a little bit of a complicated lumpus. So one of the things that Joseph Engel does list in his list is a Kesef Mishnah in Hilchos Tumas Meis that asserts that the Yisr of Bishul Basu B'chalav is a Gzeira D'Oraisa. That really the Torah doesn't want us to eat Basu B'chalav, and therefore the Torah forbade us from cooking Basu B'chalav, from manufacturing it, because that will likely lead to eating it. So that's an interesting idea. If you put the Prima Gaddim's ideas together, it would come out that Bishul Basu B'chalav of less than a shear should be mutter, according to him. Gzeira l'gzeira. Now, he happens not to say that. So it could be that he disagrees with this whole premise that Bishul Basu B'chalav is itself a gzeira. But it's interesting, if you want to take this lumpish to the nth degree, you could come up with that possible comparison.
So we're just like gzeira d'oraisa siyach?
So I wouldn't think so. And I think that I could explain to you maybe why he might say that. Once wanted to suggest that there's a, I'm going to say, there's a Tosfos in Chulin that discusses Gzeira L'Gzeira, and it sounds like Tosfos in the beginning of Kol HaBasar, where it sounds like from Tosfos that there's no Makar, something that Chazal perceived. So why was it so obvious? So maybe you could suggest, we have a rule that Kol the Tokin Rabbanim Kein D'Oraisa Tokin, that the rabbis tried to follow Torah patterns when they made their dinner. So maybe what this Tosfos means is that the fact that Chazal didn't impose a Gzeira on top of the Gzeira, maybe they perceived a similar structure in the Torah itself. That there was there aren't Gzeiras, there aren't Siyogim imposed on top of other Siyogim. And you could maybe use that to explain a different Rambam, which is less, would take a less radical statement than the this is a little bit tangent, but the Rambam says that it's mutter to cook chicken and milk. Sounds like it's against the Mishnah, it's a whole discussion what the Rambam's getting at, but maybe it could be that if the Rambam does believe that Bishul Basu B'chalav is a siyach, and chicken and milk we know is a Gzeira D'Rabbanan, so maybe he means that the Gzeira D'Rabbanan of chicken and milk doesn't include cooking, because cooking is itself a siyag. So Chazal didn't make a siyag on top of what was itself a siyag, even though that was a siyag in the Torah.
Isn't it most special like the bachelor limo? Yeah. You can't cook and milk meat together.
Correct. So that's so Dinah Torah.
That's a siyag.
Right, that's Dinah Torah. And the Kesef Mishnah says, and there's maybe even a good proof from the Rambam himself, that that's a siyag in the Torah. That's a din in the Torah to prevent you from eating. And it's interesting the fact that Torah uses the word Lo Sabasho, which maybe shows you that's the focus rather than that's the whole discussion. We learn Chulin, we can talk about that, but that's
if you cook milk and meat together, you will eventually be eating it together.
So that's, well, you don't have to be, but that's what
the cooking itself is not.
Cooking itself is awesome. And eating is also, but what the Kesef Mishnah suggests, and there's a Rambam in his actual words, it's not like this as well, that the reason the Torah prohibited cooking is because cooking will logically lead to eating.
Okay,
fine. But in this case, both of the siyag are d'oraisa.
Correct. That's why, again, it's not as radical as the Prima Gaddim. Prima Gaddim, I think, is a tremendous chiddush. And I said, maybe the part of it, the less radical part, you could use to explain that Rambam. The Prima Gaddim is very difficult. And the only suggestion we have is that maybe the fact that Chazal did this was imitating the Torah's attitude itself. But again, I think it's discussed in the Rosen Zweig. There's what to say about it, but it's definitely a tremendous issue. Because again, many of the explanations that we have about why we say in Gozer Gezeira Gezeira are premised in the fact that it has to do with Chazal's authority and various things unique to Dinim Derabbanan that make this a surprising week. So in any event, it would have come out perhaps that Prima Gadim could have said there's no Isser Chassi Shir by Bishul Basul Chalav for this reason. He doesn't actually say that. You can speculate why. Maybe he doesn't agree that Bishul itself is a Siyach or other possible differences. It's also interesting, once you raise the question about Isurei Hana, and is there an Isser Chassi Shir? So after tomorrow, I don't think we're going to see each other until after Shabbos Bereishis. That's correct. I think Bereishis is connected to Methodist here. So there is a discussion. You have in mind, if you can remember this, till Shabbos Bereishis, the Chugas Or HaMeir, which was written by Meir Shapiro, who was most well known for founding Tafyomi. But he also wrote the Chugas Or HaMeir. So he has a whole discussion. This Chugas is a fascinating discussion. Maybe download it from HebrewBooks.org and read it over Shabbos Bereishis, whether the Eitz Hadas is an Isser Hana or just an Isser Achil. And then he discusses the possible ramifications that might have for Chatzi Shir. Because there was a whole discussion that maybe Chava took the Eitz and split it and gave half of it to Adam. So maybe we shouldn't have been Nenesh on this, maybe it was a Chatzi Shir. So he discusses in light of this whole discussion Chatzi Shir and Isser Hana. Definitely feel free to.
We don't know what the shear was for that Isser.
So that was so maybe it's being right. So
a whole fruit as to is the shear.
Or maybe because I
right.
Maybe maybe not. So you look at the discussion in the Midrashim, it's an interesting topic, a little bit far afield, but again it's almost the end of the Yom as we're approaching Shabbos Bereishis. Okay. So those are some of the possible ramifications of saying that there is a siyag concept to Chatzi Shir, and maybe there are nafkaminas to this. Now again, that may be surprising. We maybe would have taken the intuitive approach that in Dorshin time of the Kra, that okay, conceptually it could be a siyag, but to say that we can make halach nafkaminas based on that is surprising. But we have to contend with the fact that so many achronim, so many major achronim, and perhaps rishonim as well, seem to take that as a given. And you also find this, and I mentioned the Bishul Basul B'Chalav, there's much literature there as well that assumes you can make nafkaminas from that premise, and the fact that Bishul might be a siyach. So as much as that might be surprising, I have to contend with the fact that there is this consensus among a very broad group of achronim that that's a valid approach. One notable exception was the Shuvas Chazon Bachim in the context of Basul B'Chalav. Shuvas Chazon Nachum says, who cares if it's a gzera? We have no rishus to ever make nachaminas about that. Maybe it's true conceptually, but in practice, it has to apply across the board. So he's like the lone voice screaming this, but so many other achronim clearly were willing to make nachaminas, including the Chazon Nachum's own brother. Chazon Nachum had a brother that dug with Mesharim, which had been a rav, one of the great developers of Israel in the past century. Shemitah Rav has a tshuva where he discusses, if there were, Rav Shechter has an article about this in Beis Yisra, where he quotes a similar idea from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, that if somebody has a way of testing whether a food is basul b'chalav, he wants to know if food is basul b'chalav or not, and he has a way of testing it, and the test is itself an act of bishul. So are you allowed to cook this possible basul b'chalav item for the purpose of ascertaining that it's basul b'chalav, so that you won't eat it? So maybe one could say that if bishul is because we're afraid you're going to eat it, if you're doing bishul to stop yourself from eating it, then it should be mutter. And the Shabbat Rav says that's the case. Happens to be his brother, the Chazal Nachum, was the one who said you can't make nafkaminas, and all of this discussion is problematic. So again, I think that's an understandable reaction, but we have to contend with the fact check. Sorry, I'm so sorry that everyone else was willing to discuss that possibility. Hi.
Just to get the last one clear about the brother of the Chazal Nachum.
Right.
If you do a test to test whether it's Basul B'Chalav and it's Bishul, are you allowed to do it? So he says that it's okay because Bishul might be a siyach.
Right.
But that's totally different because that's a suffix. We don't know whether this
right.
is.
Right, so the fact that something might be a part of the consideration.
Yeah, I mean,
agreed. But that's a valid thing to throw into the equation. But what he's operating on is that the iser bishul is defined by its need to eat, by its normal usage to eat afterwards. And if that's not why you're doing it, that will take away the. You're right that the suffix element is worth throwing into the equation, but that's not the approach that he's focusing on. So before we run out of time, just want to discuss that there is an approach that brings question one and question two together. And I think this is what Sammy was getting at a little bit before. That we've seen basically two questions. Right? The question of, is Chatzi Shir an independent idea? Or is it an idea that has the identity of every individual issue? That was question one. Question two, is Chatzi Shir a siyag? Is it just there because we're afraid of what will happen next? Or is it inherently awesome, regardless of what's going to happen next? So there are a number of achronim who suggest it's the same question. They can come together. That when you have something that is inherently awesome, so then Chatzi Shir is bad by itself, regardless of what happens, and that maintains the identity of that issue. So, for example, when you have chelev, so chelev is always inherently bad. Therefore, any amount of it is called chelev, and it's also objectively whether or not there's a possibility of finishing it. But if you were to have something which is only temporarily awesome, so then, it's not inherently bad. And there is an Isra Chatzi Shir, that's a siyag. Then, it's not that there's anything inherently wrong with a small amount. There's just a gezeira we're afraid is a siyag d'oraisa, we're afraid you're going to have more. But that siyag is a broad Torah policy. In that case, it doesn't take on the identity of the individual Isra. And that could explain a lot of things. One of the things you could explain is the Mahal Nach that we mentioned. Right? The Mahal Nach was both intuitive and difficult because he suggested that a temporary Isser shouldn't have Chatzi Shir. But we know the Yom Kippur does have an Isser Chatzi Shir. So perhaps what the Mahal Nach is saying is there's two types of Chatzi Shir. There's a Chatzi Shir that is inherent, Midin Kol Chela. That would only apply to a permanent issur. And that would be applicable even if there was no possibility of finishing. While if you have a temporary issur, like Pesach and like Yom Kippur, so then the issur Chatzi Shir is only about finishing the issur. And that's not inherent, that's a broad Torah idea. And that's why, again, the Rambam needs an extra pasuk to tell you that when it comes to chametz, it's a chiddush, chametz has inherent status even when it's less than a shir. So there is room to connect these two questions, these two ideas, and to apply them as such. So where does that take us when it comes to other isurim outside the realm of achila, and most specifically for our interests, the area of Shabbos, the sugya that we are somewhat holding in. So that's what we will have to pick up on 9:30 tomorrow morning. And hopefully, if we're able to be here, we'll be able to.